And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everyone. Today's Wednesday, August 28th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Kevin. I'm here with Darren. Welcome to show 119. Please listen to us anyway you get your podcast. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a share. Hit that button and tell your friends about us. Today on the show, it's the final show of the summer. It's the last of the Sports Potpourri Nights as NFL is coming. College football is coming. A lot of stuff going to be happening soon. Give us a listen tonight. We're going to go around the world of sports. We're going to start with baseball. We got the Yankees. We got the Mets. Looks like this is turning out to be, which could be a very good September as we head into the last days of August. Yankees in first place right now. Mets holding on to a potential wild card spot. They're only two or three games back. I'm not going with today's standing so far. Kev, let's start it off with some Mets.
Yeah, it's three games back of Atlanta that they just refuse to lose. Arizona and San Diego were so hot. You know, they're six behind both of them, three behind Atlanta. And even though Atlanta keeps getting injured, you know, Riley last week, man, they just keep effing winning. And it's frustrating because you take a look, you know, the Mets were in this middle of the 10-game stretch here where they were had three at home against Baltimore, four at San Diego, three at Arizona. So three terrific teams. They took two from Baltimore, which they wanted to. We talked about that last week with the two walk-offs. They go into San Diego. You're really, as it turned out, disappointed to only split because that Sunday game, they were up 2-0. Quintana actually pitched a gem. Shutout ball for seven innings. Buto gave up the two-run home run in the eighth inning to tie it. And then, Darren, you texted me after he hit it, or he texted both of us. Jackson Merrill comes up big yet again for the Padres and hits one off Diaz. And you know what? I'm starting to think Jackson Merrill might be the rookie of the year.
I'm going to give you a stat on this real quick, Kevin.
Just a quick stat.
Yeah.
Actually, he's taking the lead, but here's the stat. There are three players under the age of 21 that have hit six homers or more after the eighth inning of a game, eighth inning or beyond, to tie or take a lead for their team. Frank Robinson, Mel Ott, Jackson Merrill. I mean, we're talking about elite company for a guy. He's just been clutch. And it's not just that. They put him into center field. He never played it before. They've done a lot of things. He has to play a very tough position. Right now, on the stats I saw earlier this week, he had pass schemes in the odds, which I thought he was never going to do. So I didn't mean to cut you off, Kev. But that's how hot Merrill has been, especially in big spots. It's been amazing because the Mets should have won three or four. And they were the better team throughout most of that series. They had a dud in game two. But one and three, they dominated. And they should have won game four. Jerickson Profar, who's set a career high at home runs as well, he's got to hit the two-run homer off Buto. And he's got 21 homers and has been clutch all over the place. Couldn't hit anywhere else, but he comes to San Diego and he hits great. It's not that you're disappointed with the split in San Diego, but you were a little bit.
Going in, you know, with the lead after seven innings on Sunday, you're disappointed to come out with the split. That's the proper way of putting it. Going into the series, four games, you would have been thrilled to come out with a split. No doubt about it. 100%. 1,000%. You'd have been happy to go 2-2. And then they go into Arizona. We're recording this before the first pitch of the game Wednesday night. They did beat Arizona Tuesday night. Big six-run inning in the fifth there. And Manaea cruised. Manaea's been pitching great for the last month for them. I mean, he's got about a 2.2 or 2.3 ERA in his last seven or eight starts. He's turned it around. He's become their ace. And, you know, like I said at the top, the frustrating part is the Braves refuse to lose.
You're getting a lot of good starting pitching too, Kev.
Oh, they are. They really are. I mean, between Manaea, Severino's been pretty good most of the year. David Peterson. Where the hell has this been? You know, 2020 came up during the COVID year. He pitched pretty well in the COVID year. And then he sort of flattened out, was really bad last year. He underwent the hip surgery. And this year, maybe the hip was bothering him enough that it affected him so much that he's come out now. He's throwing strikes, which was the most important thing. He doesn't strike out a ton of people. He pitches to contact, but he's got good enough stuff that he can pitch to contact a little bit and, you know, let the defense play behind him. And, you know, he's been able to go six, seven innings now all of a sudden. He pitched into the eighth inning for the first time the other night, too. I mean, you couldn't ask for anything more than you've gotten from the Mets starting pitching this year. The bullpen, you know, Diaz, you know, even with Merrill's home run the other night, he's been great since coming back off the suspension. They've gotten more than they could have asked for from Budo. Maton's been solid for them since the trade. They got Nunez back, who's had a terrific year. And that pushes some of the other guys, you know, Ottavino and Stanek and Brazoban back where, you know, middle of the innings. Hopefully we don't need them in close league games. You know what? It's going to be a fun September here. We need some of the teams in front of us to lose a little bit too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Braves are 8-2 in their last 10, Kevin. That's the problem. Yeah. I mean, they'll even last night, I'm watching the Braves-Twins game, and Twins come back, tie it up late, send it to extras, and then the Braves put up 4 in the 10th, and you're like, geez. And the Twins put up 2. They made a little bit of a run, but not enough. And you're like, you know, you just want to see the Braves falter a little bit. And well, I mean, they're going to have their opportunity. They're going to have to for the Mets to get where they need to be, the offense is going to have to carry them. The pitching has been as good as it's going to be. If it continues to go that way, it'll be fine. But it's got to be Alonso actually having a September. It's got to be Lindor continuing to do what he does. And it's going to need a little bit of help from everybody. Marte back in the lineup is a difference maker if he's on. And they need all these guys and all these bats swinging because they can catch up. They can make up 3 games. That's not an insurmountable number. And I'm hoping they do because that'll make baseball so much fun here in October, which is what we want.
Here's what's nice. Even though they haven't had the best of years, but when the Messing can go out there and everybody's healthy now, and all of a sudden you've got guys like McNeil and Alvarez and Bader hitting 8 and 9 in this lineup, that's a pretty deep lineup.
Absolutely.
When you've got that quality hitter there down there. You know, what the Mets need to do is hopefully they've got the 2 games left in Arizona. You're hoping for a split. And all of a sudden, you go 6-4 in this 10-game stretch. But then they can't have a letdown. They have to go into Chicago and sweep the White Sox. The White Sox just set the record fewest games to 100 losses. They're 31-100 or 31-101, whatever it is now. You have to not have a letdown. You have to go in there and sweep. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Just keep winning series the way they've been doing. I mean, that right now that's the key. As we get into, you know, you got 2 or 3 weeks before they're down to nitty gritty stuff.
Yeah.
Just keep winning series one after the other.
But you can't afford a loss to the White Sox. I'm sorry. That's a team you have to sweep. No doubt about it. If they, you know, the Mets way would be to come out here. The Mets way would be to win these 2 in Arizona, sweep the Diamondbacks, and then go out there and lose 2 out of 3 to the White Sox.
Well, just win 2 out of 3. I mean, just keep winning these series and keep it going. I mean, that's what you need to do right now.
Yep.
Crosstown, Yankees are 23 games over before today. Judge at an enormous pace. Before today is at 51-122 through 130 games. 60 home runs definitely in reach. 31 games left on that schedule. You know, I looked at it. Judge, Soto have hit 88 home runs and 217 RBIs with 212 runs scored and 217 walks, and we are not out of August. We still have a couple of days left in August, so it's at a torrid pace. Listen, for me, the best news today with the Yankees was Jazz Chisholm was activated. He actually hit a home run tonight already, and that's the best news I could tell you. Darren, why don't you talk to me a little bit about the Yankees?
Well, the thing is with this team, all the struggles and everything that's gone on and how much we've been upset about this team, the Yankees right now have the best record in the American League. They've been the Indians, Guardians, I'm sorry, help, 9-16 over 25 game span. You know, the Orioles haven't been playing well, but the Yankees are a half game behind the Dodgers for the best record in baseball. And both of these teams are teams that you would sit there and say, they haven't been great, but they are doing what they're supposed to do, which is winning, even though the Yankees are really in danger, real danger of losing two out of three to the Nationals, which should not happen. But that's kind of where we sit. Here's the thing. If Verdugo doesn't hit, Dominguez has to play. They have to bring the kid up. There's no reason. What's the worst thing that happens? I mean, there's no downside when you're replacing the number nine hitter who's not hitting right now. Absolutely. There's no downside to it.
Absolutely right. I mean, Verdugo, I thought he'd be at least coming into Yankee Stadium. You would have thought before the season, 270 at least, you know, 15 to 20 home runs, being the lefty bat, 75 RBIs, and just being that professional hitter that he can be. And he has been severely underwhelming this entire season.
Oh, he's been awful. At
this point, there's nothing, like you said, there's nothing to lose bringing up Dominguez. And rosters expand in a couple of days here, September 1st. At that point, I mean, if Dominguez is not on this roster and starting to play over Verdugo, there's something wrong with this Yankee hierarchy.
Yeah, no, it just doesn't make any sense. You know, Wells has to play every day. They're playing him more. I mean, he's getting more of his role in the platoon now. But even if he's not catching, put him at first, because LeMahieu coming up in big spots is just devastating. Gino's been talking about it for 3 years. I mean, it's enough already with DJ LeMahieu. We've seen it. We've seen everything we need to see. Well, I mean, it's been awful for the last couple of years, but you would say, he was just hurt, maybe. No, he just has lost it all. He has no power. He doesn't hit for average. It's like when Jeff McNeil's not hitting for the Mets. There's no purpose behind it. If you don't hit for average or power, what do you have going on? So Wells has to play every night. Dominguez has to be in this lineup every day. Still hate the damn pen, got to be honest. But the return of Chisholm and the return of Stanton do something for this lineup that's, you know, really impressive. I mean, they pitch around Judge all night long, but Stanton every now and then makes him pay. Chisholm loves being a Yankee. It's one of those fun things to have a guy on this team that is so excited about being a Yankee, and he just can't wait to be here. He's like he's pinching himself every day, and that's kind of where we are with this team. The struggles are there. The pen sucks, but at the same time, they're right there. They have a shot to be the one seed in the American League, get the bye, and do the whole thing. G?
Your point about throughout all this, they're still in first place is a good one, because I was thinking about it the other day, right? And at this point, you have 88 home runs between Judge and Soto, right? If I told you you had four guys who had 22 home runs apiece, you'd probably be okay with it if they had 217 RBIs. Here we got two guys that have that. Is it just that the lineup can't sustain those two guys plus more, you know, another 30 home run hitter, another big average guy? I don't know, but maybe that's the case. I mean, I've never seen two guys like this produce. This is getting a little crazy the way they're producing the two of them. You know, they may hit 100 home runs and have 250 RBIs between them. If you put that out and, you know, you're looking at a regular team, that could be three or four guys that give you that production. So I'm not sure if that's it. I've been complaining about a lot of these players all year, like LeMahieu, and, you know, we need a third baseman, and, you know, I've had enough of Verdugo and set. But at the end of the day, maybe it's just that the offense needs to – if the offense is only going to be these two players, maybe everything else just has to fill in around it the way it is.
Kev? I think it can be more than those two. You know, like you said, with Chisholm coming off the injured list now, he's going to be big key in September. Stanton – when he's back, if he's back, you know, that just gives you a little bit of production behind Judge. And like Darren, you said, they're going to pitch around Judge. Fine. You know, Stanton at least gives you the threat of, you know, strikeout or home run. But at least he's got that home run.
He is back, by the way. Stanton is back.
Okay. And then you've got, you know, like I said, they have to bring up Dominguez, lengthen that lineup a little bit. But, you know, you start looking at the Orioles lineup. And, you know, you've got Henderson, you've got Santander, who are lower level than Judge and Soto. But you've got those two.
But very good.
But the rest of the lineup there, Rutschman has been good at behind the plate there. But Mountcastle, Kowser, Westberg, even Holiday. The Orioles have really underperformed this year when you look at what
Westbrook's been out for a few weeks and it's hurt them.
That has. Holiday's hitting under 200. Mountcastle's 265. You know, he's got 13 home runs. Big deal from your first baseman. Kowser, 19 home runs, but hitting 247 and struck out 130 times. You know, he's supposed to be another one of these young kids that come up. They're good players. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not trying to knock them as players. They're good players.
He's the American League Rookie of the Year. Yeah, he is.
But
in the National League, he'd be screwed. In the American League, he's the Rookie of the Year. Wells is probably second right now. That's how bad it is on the American League.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, I think, you know, before the season, the start thought was that the Orioles are going to have this real powerful lineup. It hasn't really shaken out that way up and down the lineup. They've been good. Don't get me wrong. But I think it's been a little bit under what they were expecting. And that's helped keep the Yankees in it.
Yeah. And Darren,
yeah, I agree with you on that.
You said it before. Well, you know, it's the same thing goes for the pen. We've been complaining about the pen the whole time. But Clay Holmes has been pretty good out of the back end. And they're putting enough pieces together to get through to him.
26 of 36 save opportunities is not pretty good.
It's pretty good.
If I had a megaphone, I'd scream at you. If you were close to me, I'd punch you in the face right now. That's not good.
All right. What else?
Listen, he's doing his best. Just a couple of quick questions for you guys. Well, really, I'm going to start with – I'll do two of them, actually.
Good.
Will Judge hit 63?
Yes.
No. He's not going to have enough pitches to hit.
Okay. Will the White Sox finish with a worse record percentage-wise than the Mets in 1962 and take that albatross off the Mets?
Yes.
I agree with you on that one, too.
They are bad.
I think Judge is going to hit the homers. I'm with Gino on one, and I think the White Sox will have to win 10 more games out of their last, 30? I don't know if they can do it. They're at 132. They got 30 games left going into today. They'll have to win 10 to go 41-1 and 121. I don't know if they could do it, but if they take two out of three from the Mets, they will. But yes, the Mets can knock that off if they take them.
I mean, this is a lineup there's just nothing left in that lineup. You got Robert, who's
they got Robert
220, and he's in 223.
Listen, trust me, he's on my fantasy team. I know everything you need to know about Luis Robert. It's devastating.
And the pitchers.
I mean, the stat sheet. I see something. He steals a base. The other guy I want to bring up for you guys, one third one, actually. Can Ohtani go 50-50? He's at 41-40 right now.
Yes. I think he gets
the result. Yeah.
Will he?
Yes.
You both think he's going to go 50-50?
Yep.
I think he's going to end up short on the homers.
I think he's going to get enough at bats with this lineup. The Dodgers turn that lineup over so many times. I think he gets 9-9. So yeah.
Okay, because they are right now. I mean, you talk about legendary seasons. If Judge hits 63, Ohtani goes 50-50. The White Sox had the worst record in the history of baseball. A lot of stuff. Jackson Merrill could break the record of Mel Ott and Frank Robinson. There's a lot that's happening this season. It is a pretty wild season. And, you know, we've gotten some good baseball. And every team that's going to make the playoffs is going to be a pretty good team. The Royals are one game behind the Guardians right now. The Royals can pass the Guardians. You wouldn't have thought this a month ago. No chance they were going to catch him. G?
And add into that Tariq Skubal could wind up winning the Triple Crown for a pitcher. Win, yeah. Strikeout, no DRA, no right there.
Yeah, it could be crazy. Judge is only 13 points behind Witt also, by the way. Witt down to 346, Judge up to 333. So there's definitely an opportunity there as well. There's a lot of cool things happening right now in baseball, which makes it kind of fun. Paul Skeens is a phenom. Lots of young, fun players to watch. And like I said, right now the odds-on winner, better than odds-on winner for the American League Rookie of the Year is Kowser, and Austin Wells right now is second in the odds. Austin Wells, who was hitting 200 for most of the season. So that's where we kind of sit with baseball.
Darren complained wasn't getting enough at bats.
It's ridiculous, man.
All right, a couple other
Kev, I just wanted to give Kev one thing here. Yeah, just one quick thing. Kev, why don't you talk to us about Toronto, Boston? Because I know you love everything that goes on.
Just one of those weird things.
A couple of these great stats.
Yeah, we had mentioned this a couple weeks ago. The Blue Jays and the Red Sox had a suspended game from back in June.
June 26th.
Thank you. Then they made a trade, and Danny Jansen, who was the starting catcher for the Blue Jays, he was up at bat for the Blue Jays when the game was suspended. Well, he got traded to the Red Sox, and the Red Sox catcher at the time, they I'm drawing a blank on the catcher's name, but he got sent down. And so Danny Jansen, during his at-bat for the Blue Jays, goes behind the plate for the Red Sox, becomes the first player ever in Major League Baseball history to play for two different teams in one game.
Unbelievable stuff, man.
So the other amazing stat in that game, by the way, Mr. George Springer hit home run number 7 and number 19 in the same game. I'm just saying. He hit home run. He hit his 7th home run of the year and his 19th home run of the year in the same game.
Nice.
Again, something we've never seen before. But there you go. I've never seen before. It might have happened in the past, but that's the only time I've ever heard of it.
I got one other thing with baseball. Last Friday, Raciel Iglesias, hit Jacob Young with a pitch of the Washington Nationals, and it ended his streak of 38 consecutive batters retired over the course of all of his saves. Just a little note. That's 38 consecutive batters he had retired before
he hit the guy.
That's what ended the streak. Can you imagine? And somebody was crazy, somebody man. I saw that's it. An awesome I saw story. It written up, and somebody was saying that that's basically pitching a perfect game, and nine more outs the next day. I mean, it's just crazy stuff. Obviously, over a number of innings. So,
yep.
All right. Any other baseball points before we move on?
Well, that's all I got.
Nope.
All right. So NFL getting ready to start up next week. Couple of notes we've had over the last couple of days. CeeDee Lamb signed a major contract with Dallas Cowboys finally. 4 years, $136 million. Dallas seems to be trying to get everything set before the season now all of a sudden quickly. They also brought in Dalvin Cook to compete with Ezekiel Elliott and Rico Dowdle in the backfield. Don't know how much he's going to have left in the tank, but he's going to give them something because you got Cook and Elliott back there with Rico Dowdle. So,
Five years ago, that's a backfield.
It's a backfield 5 years ago. I agree. Russell Wilson was named the starter in Pittsburgh over Justin Fields. Jamar Chase today decided to go to practice, but he showed up in street clothes, not in his uniform. So we assume that the hold-in is still in effect. Although they said he was coming back to the practice field, he did. But just not in uniform. He was in street clothes. And the NFL went down to roster cuts this week. A couple of notable guys went on the PUP list. Nick Chubb, TJ Hockenson, Odell Beckham, Kansas City linebacker BJ Thompson, Carolina running back Jonathan Brooks, Ram tight end Tyler Higbee, Bradley Chubb, Kendrick Bourne. There were a couple other names out there. So those guys can't play for the first four games of the year minimum. Any other NFL points?
Nah, we're going to be doing a lot on the NFL in future shows, so I don't have a ton to talk about with it. Okay. But the Jets did keep 10 defensive linemen, which is interesting because some guys played so well they were afraid to let somebody else get a look at them. We'll see what happens, but we'll get more into the Jets when we get into the AFC preview, which will be in a few days.
Okay. We'll move over to golf. Keegan Bradley won the BMW Championship last week. FedEx Cup coming up this week, $25 million prize. It's at Eastlake Golf Club in Atlanta, Georgia. This is just for everybody, just to remind everybody, this way everybody starts actually with strokes already. So Scheffler's at minus 10 to start. Schauffele's at minus 8. Matsuyama minus 7. Keegan Bradley minus 6. Aberg minus 5, and then 5 guys at minus 4. Those are the leaders. McIlroy, Morikawa, Clark, Burns, and Cantlay. I am saying Aberg. You know that.
Aberg.
Kev, any points on golf?
It's just interesting to see Keegan Bradley win because he'll be vice captain for the President's Cup team coming up here, and he'll be the Ryder Cup captain next year. If this is the start of him playing well, do we dare think about him being the playing captain next year? Which would be a rare thing.
Well, just remember this, though, about Keegan. He was 50th on this list. He played himself up to fourth with this win. He was not gonna make it to the next bat and to the next round. But he's a very emotional guy. That always plays well in Ryder play. It wouldn't be a horrible thing, Kev. It really wouldn't be.
Yep.
And we're gonna talk about college football in a little bit. But can you imagine being in Atlanta this weekend? And then getting to go to the BMW and then getting to go to BMW Stadium Saturday night or to see Georgia versus Clemson. That's a nice little sports vacay. Anyway, I'm sorry, Kevin. I didn't mean to cut you off on it.
No, you didn't.
Okay. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Keegan played great the other day. It's fun when they're down to the best 30 players in the world. Obviously, like you said, people get the advantage because of they've earned it throughout the year. And we're going to see if Shoffley can catch Scheffler or anybody else can get up there and catch him as well. But, you know, it was a fun tournament last week. Course was brutal. I mean, there were just shots that couldn't go anywhere near, anywhere near the pin because of how tough they made it on Saturday. And I mean, on Sunday. And you know what? That's what we want to see. We want to see tough golf conditions. And that's what we got to see last week. And I think we'll get to see that same thing happen again this week in Atlanta.
Scheffler, by the way, the favorite at +115 to win. Shoffley at +230. Everybody else after them is basically 1,000 or more on the plus side. It's really because of the stroke leads and stuff. It puts a whole new gambling piece into this. Top 10 stuff is just the numbers are outrageous. All the golfers I gave you are on the negative side. No one's on the plus side to get into the top 10. So just it's a great little tournament to watch here, but because of the strokes leads to start, the gambling aspect is just blown out of the water. Unless you have some guy who you think is going to come back from down 7-8 strokes to start, it's just it becomes a novelty basically on the betting side of this. So, all right, we are moving to college football. Darren,
let's do the Travers real quick first. Let's do the Travers real quick.
Let's do the Travers.
We had an epic race in the Travers. Okay, I mean, Fierceness holds off Torpedo Anna, beats the lady, and a great finish and an epic finish at the Travers. The thing about the Travers this year, the pace was not ridiculous. So you felt like Dornock, who was the lukewarm 5-2 favorite. It's a wide open race. Torpedo Anna's 3-1. Fierceness is 3-1. Dornock's 5-2. Sierra Leone's 7-2. I mean, these horses are all right on top of each other. At the top of the stretch, you feel like Dornock's taking over from was it Batten Down?
Batten Down. Batten Down the lead.
On the top of the stretch. Yep. And then all of a sudden, Fierceness, and like Johnny V does, makes the right move at the right moment. Right, Kev? I mean, and we had a hell of a finish. Why don't you finish up on it, Kev? Go ahead.
I mean, you know, like you said, 48 for the half, 111 and 3/5 for the mile. They were crawling around the track in comparison to what they should be doing there. At the top of the stretch, Fierceness took over. Dornock faded a little bit. Batten Down faded even more. And Fierceness opened up by about 2 or 3 lengths, and all of a sudden, here comes Torpedo Anna, who just put in a run, gaining every stride coming down the stretch there. Fierceness, you know, show some fierceness, you know, no pun intended, or pun intended. He dug in there deep and held off Torpedo Anna. If that race went another 50 yards, Torpedo Anna probably wins that race. But
and I don't know if Sierra Leone doesn't come in for second too, by the way, because Sierra Leone was coming, just not as strong as Torpedo Anna. But that was at the top of the stretch. I thought that Sierra Leone was the horse to watch, and then all of a sudden, Torpedo Anna just took off.
Yeah, I think the slower pace hurt Sierra Leone big time. Because absolutely, you know, the courses at the top, especially Fierstein, still has something left in the tank to hold him off. The biggest surprise to me was Henri just doing nothing. Broke bad, went to last, and never moved out of last place.
That's a deeper closer than Sierra Leone, and without pace, that horse has no shot. Yeah. I think that we are going to have a hell of a classic this year. Oh, these horses are beating each other up now. This is going to be just great horse after great horse. If you're a horse racing fan, the classic's going to be unbelievable this year.
I thought it was surprising, you know, Fierceness coming off the Jim Dandy win earlier in the Saratoga meet. And I know Fierceness has a tendency to not run after a big win. He ran a big race this time. He paid $980 to win, which is, I think, is a huge price for a horse of Fierceness's class.
Yeah. Absolutely. It was such an evenly bet race. I mean, Door Knock was the lukewarm favorite going in. It was wide open. Torpedo Anna ran a hell of a race. You know, very rare that the fillies run that well with the boys, and she was outstanding.
She was undefeated coming in racing fillies, and she was dominating.
Oh, she was crushing them.
I mean, so it's definitely a good spot to have her test her against the boys, and damn, she almost pulled it off. There's no shame in her losing that race.
And she'll be in the classic as well, and she'll have a chance again. Yeah.
You know, she runs in the distaff, she's going to blow that field away, period. What's better for racing is to have Torpedo Anna run in the classic. That's going to bring more eyeballs to the classic.
I agree. I think we have a great classic coming up.
Yep.
And, I can't wait. But
we'll be previewing the Breeders' Cup this year.
No doubt about it. We'll preview all the races. Gino is very big on the sprint. He'll be all over it. And he loves the distaff. That's just the way Gino is. The juvenile distaff for Gino.
Yes, yes.
Anyway, we'll talk a little college football. Kev, talk to me about the game in Dublin, because what a kickoff to the season. If this is going to be indicative of the way the NFL, college football is going to be this year, it's going to be a hell of a year.
Oh, terrific game. Georgia Tech, Florida State, kicking off in Dublin. As they should. Terrific back and forth game. Florida State got the lead, went for the two, because that's what Florida State seems to do once in a while. That opening touchdown, take two. But Georgia Tech rebounded with a touchdown pretty quickly. It was 14-14 at halftime going late third quarter. And the last three drives of the game, these started with about 6 minutes left in the third quarter. So they shortened the game big time. There are only seven drives for each team in the entire game, which is unheard of in college football, especially. Because these games drag on. Each team gets, you know, feels like 13, 14 possessions. Each team had seven in this game. Georgia Tech goes 11 plays, 89 yards, and 6:22 for the touchdown to take the 21-14 lead early in the fourth. Florida State responds with a 15-play, 84-yard drive. Took 8:24. DJ Uiagalelei, and I know I butchered that. I butchered it for the last 10 years that he's been playing, or so it feels like it's been 10 years. You know, it's amazing that he went 3 years in Clemson, a year in Oregon State, and now he's in Florida State. He converted two fourth down conversions on the drive. So like I said, 6:30 left in the game, and Georgia Tech came out 12 plays, 49 yards, bled the rest of the clock down. Key point, they got first and 10 at the Florida State 31 with a minute 11 left. 3 yard run, Florida State timeout. Second and seven. Then they had a bad snap and they lost 10 yards on the play back to the 38.
It wasn't even a bad snap. It was almost like he caught the snap and they tried to do the little fake sweep and he knocked it out of his hands. It was like just a misplay.
That jet sweep play that I think.
Yeah. And they just missed it, everything. I don't want to blame the center. It wasn't his fault. It was the quarterback wide receiver on the whole thing blew that play.
But they were back to the 38, and biggest play of the game, obviously. They were able to get the 12-yard pass down to the 26-yard line, ran the clock down, timeout, and Aiden Burr comes on and kicks the 44-yarder as time expires to give Georgia Tech the big win. Georgia Tech's defense was great. They held Uiagalelei to 193 yards in the air. Florida State is a team, 31 rushes for only 98 yards. Tech came out. Haynes King, dual threat, 11 for 16 for 146 and threw 54 yards on the ground as well. Jamal Haynes, 11 carries, 75 yards, and two touchdowns. As a team, they had 190 yards rushing, so they outgained Florida State by 100 yards on the ground. Pulled off the big upset, and just a great start to the college football season. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, a clean game, four penalties, no turnovers. Everything kind of went smooth in this game. And like you said, that big play after the fumble, that pass, you know, that got them to 12 yards on 3rd and 17 that made it possible to kick that field goal was the key to the whole thing. It was King to a Singleton on that play. Florida State on their drive converted two fourth downs to get the touchdown. They were seemingly stopped a couple times, converted a couple of big fourth downs with pass plays. Again, good football, really good football. Hopefully it's indicative of what we have going on for the rest of the year. We know we previewed the SEC and the Big Ten. We didn't really touch on either of these two teams going into this matchup, but Florida State was a top 10 team coming in, Georgia Tech unranked, and Georgia Tech on a neutral field, you know, gets the big victory.
And that sets us up for this weekend. First real weekend. We've got a couple of key games. Do we want to start with the big one? So we've got the marquee matchup. We've got Clemson, the number 14 in the preseason polls, at number one Georgia. Georgia's favored by about 13.5, unless you've seen some of the different, Gino.
Nope, 13.5.
That's what I saw, too.
All right. So should we start there with our picks?
Absolutely.
Go for it, G.
Sure.
Listen, I did the preview on Georgia. This is a team that is primed and ready to win a national title. I don't see this game stopping them. Two touchdowns is all it is. I like Georgia minus the 13.5. Darren?
You know what? Georgia is the better team. Game played in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. They're supposed to be a neutral site, but, you know, it's probably a little bit more leaning in Atlanta toward Georgia, you would have to imagine. Georgia's been amazing. It seems like Clemson's taken a step back the last couple of years. You know, it's going to be an interesting, interesting to see if Klubnik can get Clemson's offense going again. I really like the under in this game, under 49. And I do like Clemson to cover the 13.5. I think Clemson keeps it close enough. I think Georgia probably wins this game somewhere in the neighborhood of about 27-17, 24-14. I don't think it's going to be a high-scoring game. Because apparently, Kevin has got the same score as I do because he just started laughing.
Ditto. I had about 27-17 also. That was somewhere in that area. I just think 13.5 is too many. Like you said, Darren, Georgia is the better team in this matchup. But I think Clemson somehow, some way, is up for this game. They know they need to have a big win here along the way because, like you said, they've been down the last couple of years, and down for them is, you know, being in contention in the ACC and going to a major bowl game, maybe not one of the big six, but still going to fairly big bowl games. That's down for this school that's won a couple of national championships already. I think Clemson comes out and keeps it close, like you said, and covers the 13.5.
Okay.
All right, G. Got two others for us that you like, G?
I do.
Give me your other two. What do you got?
Okay, so unlike the way I normally do this, I am starting the calendar off with I'm going to Tennessee. I'm going to see my brother in Tennessee, and we're going with some Tennessee matchups. The first one is Tennessee minus 38.5 against Chattanooga. Tennessee wants to start this schedule off right. Coach Heupel wants to get this team flowing. This could be a huge blowout. This could be a lot more than 38, but I'm going to take Tennessee minus a 38.5 points at home against Chattanooga. My second game, and I'm sticking in Tennessee, I'm going to the alma mater of my niece and nephew. I am taking Austin Peay plus the 36.5 points this week against Louisville. Okay. It's the first ever matchup between Louisville and Austin Peay. It's the first game for new coach Jeff Farris for Austin Peay. He takes over. He was the tight end coach at UCLA last year. I think he wants to have them ready I think they're going to play a good game. I don't think they're going to win. I'm thinking the score is maybe 40-13 they lose, but they cover plus a 36.5. Give me Tennessee and Austin Peay to start me off in week one. Kev,
who do you got?
Oh, I was looking at some of these spreads here. Missouri's favored by 46.5 over Murray State. Kansas by 45 over Lindenwood. Oklahoma by 42.5 over Temple. But I decided to stay with some very competitive games here. My first pick, I'm going to surprise Darren and Gino by picking the Notre Dame Irish at Texas A&M. Notre Dame is 3-point underdogs going down to A&M. This will be the first game for Riley Leonard facing his old coach at Texas A&M. Mike Elko, who just came over from Duke, takes over for Texas A&M. You know, I think A&M's got the offense in place, but the defense, they had 8 transfers in on defense. I think they're going to take a little while to gel. I think Riley Leonard's going to go in there and lead Notre Dame to a victory at Texas A&M. And my third game, another battle of ranked teams, taking the home team and the favorite for the first time. I'm taking LSU -4 against USC. I would love this to be 3, but I think LSU is good enough. You know, I can see this being a 4-point type of game. I can see this being, you know, 28-24, 31-28, but I'm hoping that LSU does enough and maybe pulls it out by the touchdown. So I'm going to take LSU down the swamp -4 versus USC. So those are my two other picks.
I think that play game is in Vegas. I'm not 100% sure if it's in the swamp. I might be wrong on that.
Oh.
I might be wrong.
Maybe it is.
It might be a neutral site, just so you know.
Oh, yeah. It's a Vegas kickoff classic. So LSU listed second. I assume they were the home team. I'm still going to take LSU.
Good enough. I also went with two of the more competitive games on the slate. I'm going to start in Morgantown, where Penn State's an 8.5-point favorite at West Virginia. I just think Penn State's a bully-type team, and when they're playing against a team that they have more talent than, they can run it up on you pretty good. I think they'll come out pretty possessed. I think they're going to come and win this game, and they're going to win this game comfortably. I could see it being a 3-touchdown victory for Penn State. Aller back, offense opening up for Cole Nicky with the new offensive coordinator, and I think Penn State finds a way. And I'm going to Ben Hill Griffin Stadium, a.k.a. the Swamp. We have Miami going to Florida in a real, you know, barn burner of a rivalry down in the great Sunshine State. Everything would lead you to think that Miami might be a little bit better than Florida. The quarterback advantage is there. I think that wide receiver advantage goes to Florida, but running back goes to Miami. It's really close. The spread in this game is 2.5. What I love is the over. I don't think either team can stop the other team throwing the football, by the way. So over 53 is where I would lean. But I'm going to pick this as a spread game. I'm going to take Florida at home in the Swamp +2.5 against Miami to get started off 1-0. And, you know, they did not make a bowl last year. Florida, there's a lot of pressure on Napier to try to turn this thing around. And I think it starts on this weekend. I think it's Saturday. But against Miami. So I'll take Florida +2.5 at home. Those are my three picks for the week, obviously along with the Clemson Tigers. And that's where we are with college football right now, my friend. You have anything else? Anybody else have anything they want to touch on? One quick stat, by the way.
Guys?
Yeah, one quick stat before I let you guys go. So interesting thing watching the Florida State game. The all-time interception leader at Florida State is a man named Terrell Buckley, who we've all heard of. The tie for third is very interesting. Can you guess the two people that played cornerback at Florida State that are tied for third? One is very easy. The other one may make you think.
You would think Deion.
It's one. You got the easy one.
That was the hard one. The easy one.
The other one is Lee Corso.
That's the one I knew.
Lee Corso.
Lee Corso
was a lockdown corner at Florida State. They both have 14 picks lifetime, tied for third behind the 21 of Buckley and some kid that played in the 70, I think, Blossing game at 18. So I just thought that that was a great stat. Anyway, that's where we finish up with college football. Should be a great weekend. lot of the blowout games this first week, but there are a few real competitive ones. Hopefully we get those to be as good as the game in Dublin, and the season will kick off and we'll really be rolling. So anyway, any other comments before we wrap it up, boys?
U.S. Open in New York is this week and next week. Just one point there. Dan Evans beat Karen Kakanov. I'm butchering his last name, I'm sure. 5 hours and 35 minutes, the longest match in U.S. Open history since they went to the tiebreaker. 5.5 hours. Wow. This is like the first round.
That's incredible. Crazy. He should be exhausted for the next round.
Yeah. But that's it.
Okay. Well, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Kevin and Gino. Talk about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where the Yankees lose 2 out of 3 to the Washington damn Nationals. You got to be kidding me. Anyway, download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, Audio Boom, wherever you can get it. We post a lot on social media. Please like, share, you know, subscribe. Tell us everything you want to hear. We're doing lots of specialty episodes. Please give us a listen with the Big Ten. Give us a listen with the SEC. We're going to be doing a comprehensive college football one next week as well, plus the AFC, plus the NFC. Lots of work on our end, but we're excited about it. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.